Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, November 14th, 2017. And with me today from the MacCast, I have Adam Christensen. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. I'm doing good.
And awesome. It's great to have you here. Brian Chaffin, I'm glad to have you here today. How are you doing?
Hi.
Oh, I see. Today, you're a friendly fella.
I'm a friendly fella.
Yeah, well, I'm still glad you're here. Just
hi,
mildly uncomfortable right now.
I thought he was a Smurf.
That is awesome. I absolutely love that. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is VideoBlocks, and they are a really cool stock image, audio, and video company. So I'll talk about them soon. But before we do that, we need to talk about the iPhone, not the one we have, but the one we're going to have in 2 years. So there's a report from Bloomberg that says that Apple is planning on putting a rear-facing 3D camera system onto the 2019 iPhone model. And so this will, instead of using the TrueDepth infrared dot mesh scanning thing, it's going to use a laser system for depth finding. So where the front-facing camera is more about mapping a 3D image, your face, the rear-facing 3D will be about getting that depth thing going on. So you can, I guess you can get better bokeh effects, but also so that there will be much better accuracy for augmented reality. So the things that you're adding into your scene appear more realistically, like, you know, unlike, I'll use the IKEA app as an example. It's cool, but when I put things like a chair in my room, it floats above the floor, like almost every single time. And with this laser system, that's the sort of thing that won't happen anymore because there'll be much better.
Wait, lasers or infrared?
Lasers.
Lasers. They it sounds like they're using a very similar like radar detection kind of system where it the bounce back, they use the bounce back rate of the light in yes. captured in the sensor to determine distance.
Yes, that's exactly what they're doing or will be doing. So what do you guys think of this?
And Brian, giddy up. I mean, to a certain extent, this seems obvious and inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It should, you know, keep Apple ahead of the competition in terms of the camera.
Why? I was curious about why 2019
and not 2018.
That seems far off for, you know, like that's some years. And I'm assuming it's probably because it's very complex technology, obviously, and they want to get it right. So I may answer my own question, but it seems like we've already got the face detection stuff. This, like Brian was saying, this is the inevitable next step. You'd think they were already working on this and they'd want to have it ready to go 2018, not 2019. Well,
but there actually is another inevitable next step, and that's actually putting it on every other device too.
So the current technology you're talking about, right?
Yeah. And we've got to get through that before they can go another step. Plus, I think your point about it being difficult and wanting to do it right is probably the most salient point.
Yeah, what's going to be interesting is we will probably see Apple's competitors with this information being out there trying to rush something to market. And as often happens, it being less than great, right?
Like Samsung's facial scanning thing where you can just take a photograph of someone and print it on an inkjet. Yeah.
More people taking the quick route. So there probably is a quick route, and I'm sure they've looked at it and considered it and probably ruled that, hey, that's not the right way to do it. When's it realistically going, you know, how long is it realistically going to take? And that's probably where the 2019 date is coming from. If I backpedal.
But Apple is always slow to do this stuff. I mean, right. They bring it to one device and then they bring it to other devices unless they don't even do that. I'm looking at you 3D Touch. And I mean, this is so, you know, sort of standard operating procedure for Apple for dealing with a new technology.
I guess my reaction is coming from the fact that this is exciting. I mean, this is I think where they need to take the next leap. Because another example, Jeff, with the IKEA thing, is something that the current AR technology doesn't handle well, obviously, is you place that chair in your room and then somebody walks in the room, right? And they walk presumably behind the chair, but they're really in front of it, right?
Right.
So from a distance perspective, it breaks the augmented reality. So what they can do now is they can handle that, right? And you can now knock that person out and in the picture, push them behind the fake 3D object and maintain that illusion.
Like the NFL.
Yeah.
Another point to build on what Adam was saying about the competition using this and doing something rush to market is Apple could well have planted this information to get that to happen, just to make, you know, Samsung in particular look foolish by doing some half-assed thing like Samsung always does.
Well, the nice thing about Samsung rushing to market with something, especially if Apple is intentionally seeding information to get Samsung to do something. Samsung spends all this money to make something happen. Now Apple has a R&D team that's developed a crappy phone so they can learn what not to do. So thank you, Samsung, for spending the money so that Apple can learn from it.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Apple doesn't give a darn, as much as people like to think that they do, what really Samsung's doing or they're up to, at least not to the degree that I think some people in the media would want to have us believe.
Samsung would like to be the case too. they you know, their delusions of relevance are strong.
Yeah, so that was my way of saying I doubt Apple is planning this information to get Samsung to do something, because I think they really don't care what Samsung does.
Yeah, but it'd be super fun if they did.
It would be. I agree with that, but they're not even in Apple's thoughts. You know, Apple's like so far ahead of the thinking curve on this. It's like, well, you know, we're just going to build a great thing, and that's what we're focused on. And you know, if they want to try to copy us, great, but. You know, we know what it's going to take and the kinds of acquisitions we have to make and all those things. You know, it's interesting to watch the approach, you know, how Apple approaches these things versus their competitors. And you can see why it makes a difference and why you wind up with a product like the iPhone X, where everybody's kind of, before it comes out, saying, you know, doubting if Apple can do the next big thing. And here we are, and it's getting rave reviews from everybody in the tech press, including Android fans and stuff like that. Of course, you always have your detractors, but in general, I've been the iPhone X's being perceived in the tech community, and a lot of people are really, once again, calling it a game changer. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people really, up until this point, were really doubting if Apple could continue to do that, and here we are again.
Yep, and here we are again. All right, so I'm looking forward to seeing what Apple does with rear-facing 3D, and it'd be cool to see something next year, but apparently we're waiting till 2019. So
yeah, they want to get it right. They want to get it right. That's where it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we totally out of time on this topic, Jeff?
Go ahead. Say what you need to say.
I wrote a piece last week about being more convinced than ever that Apple Park was a big reason why we went through such a terrible 2016 in terms of new Apple products and industrial design, and why we had three iPhone generations that looked exactly the same, with a fourth that looked almost exactly the same, but with different materials. Mm-hmm. And you know, learning about just how much of how involved Johnny Ive's design team was on things like the Steve Jobs Theater. Mm-hmm. It kind of makes sense that we didn't get anything for a while. And so this is speaking to Adam's point about people who were doubting that Apple could do stuff. I think we had a momentary blip caused by a different Apple product, which was Apple Park.
You know, the more we talk about this, the more I think you have nailed it. I think Apple Park pulled too many resources internally and other products suffered for it.
Yeah.
And I think now Apple is getting back on track because they don't need to devote those resources to
yeah. 2017's been pretty stellar so far.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to what 2018 brings, and we're already getting ideas about what to expect in 2019.
Well, we still have the HomePod and the iMac Pro.
Right.
Jeez, we're not even done with 2017. So,
right.
It's good.
And, yeah. And we know that, that Apple has, and I know it's not a huge thing, but the charger pad, the AirPad coming out, which will probably be next year. Right. And then whatever they do with computers and iPads and iPhones next year and maybe AR related products or new health and fitness products, who knows? Yeah. So, I'm with you, Brian. I think we are beyond the blip, and now we're just going to start seeing more cool and interesting stuff come out.
Yeah.
And we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is VideoBlox. And I've been using VideoBlox for a little bit now, and what I love is that they have this easy system for going in and finding the stock video footage, the stock audio, and the stock images that you need for whatever your project is. You can use their stuff royalty-free for personal or commercial projects, and they have over 100,000 videos. Wow. Over 150,000 videos. Some days English is hard for me. Over 100,000 audio clips and geez, I can't even tell how many images. Metric bucket loads. So all the stuff that I've gone digging for articles and other little projects, I've just been able to find exactly what I need, no problem. And the image quality is always great, and the video quality is always awesome. And I've been really pleased with what I have. So one of the other things that I love is that they are inexpensive. So you can sign up for a year for $149 for either the video, the audio, or the images. And if you need multiple things, okay, so it's $149 per thing, which is still pretty cheap because you're getting all that content that you can imagine for just that one price all year long. But what they're doing for you listeners is a special deal. So if you go to videoblox.com/TDO, you can get the triple bundle. And the triple bundle is the video content, the audio content, and the image content, all for $149 for a year. So great deal. And this deal's good through November and December. So you need to go and check it out right away. Procrastination is not an option. Go get your bundle and have all that content that you can use. So here's what you need to do. Go to videoblox.com/TDO so you can get all the stock video, audio, and images that you can imagine for $149. It's VideoBlox, VideoBlox.com/TDO. And thank you, VideoBlox, for being our sponsor. All right. So the other thing that I want to talk about, and Brian, I'm assuming that you already have your Elven runes out and maybe even your One Ring.
Well, I've been practicing Angerthaws lately, and I just want you to know that I think it's a very good alphabet and that everybody should use it, and that the dwarves who came up with it are really cool.
I should just do the outro bumper and end the show right there.
Yeah, so you want me to give the background there?
Yes, please.
Well, Lord of the Rings is coming to Amazon Prime Video. It's going to be a series, and it's going to be material that is that it'll be new, quote unquote, new storylines that take place before the Fellowship of the Ring.
Okay, and so does that mean they're pulling from Tolkien's other stories, pulling from Silmarillion, or are they just making up new stories that take place in Middle-earth?
Well, the Silmarillion was like almost entirely the first age. So, you know, it doesn't really have a lot to do with the Fellowship of the Ring.
Man, it is just so easy to trick you.
Is now the time to admit when I was a kid, I couldn't get through the Silmarillion. My dad bought it for me and I like made it not far into it at all.
What a loser.
Adam, you do not need to be ashamed at all. The Silmarillion is a serious commitment.
Silmarillion was a serious commitment. It's a good question, though. The press release left it up entirely to interpretation. I mean, Tolkien has 10,000 years of fully documented history.
Right.
And I mean, it's I mean, which is more of a written record. Well, I mean, it's more of a written record than, you know, we have here on the Earth. It's not the Middle Earth. And that includes massive details about what was happening in the lead up to the War of the Rings, which is the book of the Lord of the Rings, the books, the Lord of the Rings. But it's not clear whether or not they're going to be mining Tolkien exclusively from Tolkien's body of background notes, or if they're going to actually just be coming up with stuff kind of like what Jackson did to a certain extent.
I'm naive here because I don't know. I know all that stuff. I know that all that stuff existed with Tolkien. Like, he created all this content and material and, you know, this massive history of that entire realm and all that stuff. I'm assuming that's part of his estate stuff. Does Amazon have actual access to that, or is that stuff already public? Or,
well, that's an interesting thing too, because, you know, Christopher Tolkien, who is Tolkien's son, and right, who's the one who did all the work on the Silmarillion, actually put that into book form, and also has done all of the other Tolkien books that have come out in the decades since his death. He didn't have anything to do with the movies. And those rights were essentially owned by someone else for the movies. Mm-hmm. Now, Amazon Prime's announcement says that they're working with, I think it's New Line and I don't know, like everybody who owns rights, but they included the Tolkien estate, which I believe, and I meant to go look this up and didn't, but I believe that the Tolkien estate is what is controlled by Christopher.
Right. I would assume. Yeah. That would be the assumption. So potentially they do have access to that material, or maybe given access to that material, which could help immensely.
Yeah, well, and there's so much stuff out there. There's so much stuff that's actually been published that they could be that they could be using as well. And some of the games that have been out, like the Middle Earth role-playing game that was sort of loosely a World of Warcraft kind of clone, but set in Middle Earth. Mm-hmm. It did a lot of stuff in the lead up to the Fellowship of the Ring, because you weren't playing the. I mean,
this is a video game.
Yeah, and you've got potentially millions of people playing, so not everybody can be Frodo. It's you know, you're actually playing just, you know, regular hobbits and dwarves and elves, etc. And a lot of that stuff was in the lead up to the Lord of the Rings, and I remember another game, like a first person shooter kind of game, that was also in the lead up to the Fellowship of the Ring. So I mean, there's plenty of stuff out there to be mined. I hope, personally, because I'm kind of obsessive about these sorts of things, I hope that they more or less stick with the vast amounts of stuff that Tolkien created.
Right.
So, me too. The Adventures of Tom Bombadil, yes or no?
Ooh,
that would be fantastic.
That could be interesting to mine, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so it feels to me like Amazon, they've already been like in top game with their original content. It feels mm-hmm. like with this, they're trying to step it up even more. And so it'll be interesting to see how Netflix and Apple Music respond.
Yeah, I mean, like, I wonder if Apple was even in the bidding for this particular project. Like, I mean, was Amazon the one who was pushing for this and is developing it, or was someone else working on developing it and then was shopping it out to the various places that are out there? And we don't have the answer to that, at least not yet.
What's interesting with what's going on with Apple, and I don't know how much you guys have talked about it here on TDO or in other places, but the interesting thing to me, again, about Apple and what they're doing with their original content or appear to be doing, and they've already said so much, I believe, in interviews and stuff like that, is they're really trying to be additive to the space rather than competitive in the space, if that makes any sense. Like, specifically coming out and saying, hey, we're not going the cable TV really heavy adult content route, right? And that was something that particularly excited me about their efforts. So when you're asking, you know, were they after this content, I don't know, it seems like it might fit in their realm, but they've already come out and said that anything that they're going to produce has to be showable in an Apple store.
Yeah, that kind of does put some restrictions on what.
I suppose so, but I'm going to call balderdash on the idea that the Lord of the Rings couldn't be shown in an Apple store.
No, I think it could. No, I wasn't implying that. Sorry if that sounded that way.
Okay.
Yeah, no, but what I was saying is that now, as I'm thinking about the kinds of content and stuff that they're going out, I'd look at that filter. But the thing is that I think the Lord of the Rings treatment under Amazon, and I guess this is maybe more the point I was trying to make, under Amazon is going to look a lot different than if, say, Apple had picked it up, right? And I think I'd be happier with it being a little more in
the Netflix the realm. Amazon realm.
Yeah, because I just
that's
think
an interesting needs, point. What does that say about Apple? What does that say about like what we know about Apple's approach?
I said this on my podcast because as a parent with two young, you know, not young, but younger children, it's very hard to find content that we can all sit down and watch together these days. It really sucks. I have to watch everything. I have to use common sense media constantly. And even there, I have to continue to filter. And everybody's kids are different and everybody's kids can handle different things. But I mean, there's just so much, especially in the realm of sexual content. It gets really, really tough, even on regular primetime television. And so I'm super excited that Apple's coming out and saying, look, we're going to take a stance. I don't think they're going to shy away from it, but the treatment of it is going to be much different. And I like the fact that we have options. I like the fact that we have both. But I think for something like Lord of the Rings, you do need a little bit more of the, I mean, you're dealing with wars and combat and things like that. I don't think you want that too toned down. I guess it doesn't have to be, you know, there's levels of it and you can pull it off without going total gore fest, right? A la Game of Thrones and still do it successfully. Like I have let my kids watch the Lord of the Rings movies, but only one of them because one of them can kind of handle it. And I know the other one just personality wise can't from the gore aspect, but it, you know, and there are a few, I think beheadings and things like that in that content. I don't know if Apple would shy away from something like that or not with this content.
I for one say that this makes at least one of us who is excited by this limitation.
That would be me.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I mean, again, because what's good for Apple in that regard, I think, is they're carving out a niche that is being underserved, I think, which is smart.
Okay, but you can serve that niche without like, you know, at the expense of that niche can be served without okay. Also not serving other things too.
I want you to take a week and go watch some of Netflix, not Netflix's. Well, you could look at, well, Netflix has done a pretty good job because they've got Series of Unfortunate Events, which is great. Yeah. But go watch some of Amazon's original family content and then come back to me. And you know, the fact that Apple wants to serve that niche at least at first, I think is a good thing. Who knows if they'll expand and change that stance in the future, but I think it's a good place for them to start. And I'm just excited about it. Because I've tried to watch some of Amazon's family-friendly shows, and they are just garbage. Like, there's horrible storytelling, horrible acting. It's junk. And what I'm excited is I think Apple's going to make really high-quality, engaging stories, and that amazing stories, having that access to that, they're going to do incredible things with that. And you can do incredible things with that and keep it family friendly and make it compelling and amazing and awesome. And I think if anybody can pull it off, it's going to be Apple.
I certainly hope so, because I'm looking forward to what they come up with. And we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. Adam, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Indeed. It was good to have me and the friendly fellow and my dorky Lord of the Rings fan self.
Yeah, it was amazing we could fit everyone into the soundtrack. Yeah. And hey, thank you to VideoBlocks for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, videoblocks.com/TDO, and get their triple bundle, $149 for all three of their stock image, photo, audio services, $149 a year. But do it in November or December, because the deal ends after that. Videoblocks.com/TDO. And listeners, thank you for being here. See you again tomorrow.